Hello, and welcome to the first part of this special episode hanging off the end of Season 4 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake. With me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
I thought we were taking a break, Graham.
Yeah, me too, Ray. But then along came the New York Department of Financial Services consent order against Deutsche Bank, and I think people are waiting to hear what we think of it.
Well, that's very kind of them. But I have to tell you that it reads more like a Shakespearean tragedy in three acts than a consent order.
Do you know, oddly, I had a very similar reaction. It's really quite unusual, isn't it?
Yes, and for more than one reason, Graham. But it is strange to see a consent order composed of three quite different and not directly related cases.
And containing quite a significant amount of detail. I guess we should look at all three of these separately then.
Oh, definitely. And I think it's going to take probably three episodes to do. I'd like to start, if I may, by quoting from the very end of the consent order.
Do you know, I suspect I know where you're going here, Ray, but please carry on.
Well, we do place huge importance on the context within which we critique or report on stories from around the world. And given what we're about to discuss, the context here is absolutely vital.
Agreed.
So, when the Department of Financial Services New York go to the trouble of including significant detail on the cooperation they've received from Deutsche Bank...
Which, if I'm honest, was almost entirely missing from the press report.
Yes, indeed. I feel we're duty-bound to include it up front.
I agree. What exactly did they say, Ray?
Well, to begin with, the department recognises and credits the bank's exemplary cooperation during the course of the department's investigations of the bank's former relationships with Danske Bank, FBME and Jeffrey Epstein.
That is pretty unequivocal, isn't it? And these are pretty tough regulators who aren't in the habit of flattering. So I think we can accept the fact that they really mean it.
They go on. This cooperation, which occurred over several years, including conducting comprehensive and thorough internal investigations of each of those former relationships and sharing the results of those investigations with the department in a detailed and transparent manner, collecting, analysing and producing numerous documents and other information to the department, and providing timely and detailed responses to the department's inquiries.
So it wasn't just a late in the day flash in the pan, or we'd better help then.
No. I mean, obviously, by this time, Deutsche Bank had already received a few fines and a lot of press, so they would have realised how important it was to behave in this way. But that's true of lots of other firms, and it isn't always matched by their actions like it was here.
Yes, and I suspect it did have a positive impact on the final verdict.
Definitely. After crediting Deutsche Bank for the substantial resources it's devoted to the remediation and enhancement of its anti-money laundering programme, it goes on to say, consistent with the requirements of New York banking law, the department has given substantial weight to the commendable conduct described above.
And we should therefore reiterate that whatever horror stories we are about to recount...
And we are about to recount... Horror stories, yeah.
Yes, that was then, some of which is a long time ago, and not now. And firms which show the approach ascribed to Deutsche Bank by the Department of Financial Services of New York are at least trying to do the right thing.
Certainly at the top of the house they are, yes. I guess their job now is to ensure that ethos is reflected throughout the business.
Yes, and I think it would be fair to say it hasn't always been like that.
As we're about to reveal, where shall we start?
Well, I think it ought to be, Ray, in line with the consent order with, I'm going to just call him Epstein, actually.
Fair enough. I mean, this is a sorry and rather sordid tale on the whole, isn't it?
Yeah, Epstein certainly appeared to be a rather sordid individual who appears to have ruined the lives of many and dragged a whole bunch of others into being co-conspirators.
Should we give a quick summary for the benefit of anyone who might just have missed the Epstein story?
if such a person exists. Yes. Shall I kick off with another quote from the consent order? It says, quote, Mr. Epstein had a well-publicised reputation related to the trafficking and abuse of young women. Allegations against him began appearing in the press as early as March 2005, with the accusation that he paid a 14-year-old girl for a massage.
And while our audience can't hear it, that word massage is written in quotation marks in the consent order, which tends to indicate even the New York regulator views it as a euphemism for something worse.
And the consent order had already made clear by this point that his history of offending had started some years before Epstein became a customer of Deutsche Bank in August 2013, where he remained until exited in December 2018.
So that places the onboarding a good 8 years after the first stories began to appear in the press.
Yeah, but then you know what the press is like in respect of a salacious story.
I'm not sure that's entirely fair, Graham, but it doesn't really matter. Epstein pleaded guilty to two charges of prostitution, including the soliciting of a minor to engage in prostitution in exchange for a deferred prosecution agreement, with immunity from extensive federal sex trafficking charges. He was given an 18-month prison sentence and placed on the sex offenders register.
Which, Ray, for a man of significant influence, is a quite breathtaking result, considering those federal charges could have led to a lifetime in prison.
In fact, it got even better for him because he only served 13 months, and most of that included him being allowed out of jail 6 days a week for 12 hours a day.
So it was a kind of prison demi-pension or bed and breakfast arrangement then?
Well, something like that, yeah.
Very nice.
And then in 2009, the non-prosecution was made public and included, among other things, the fact that the US had compiled a list of identified victims for whom Epstein would pay their legal representation.
And I see it also identified at least three co-conspirators who are not personally identified in the consent order, but as we go to record, we know that Ghislaine Maxwell has been arrested and held without bail pending trial in a year's time for her involvement in this horrible business.
And she, along with the other three co-conspirators, had been publicly named by 2013.
So how did he end up at Deutsche Bank in the first place?
Apparently his personal banker from another US bank moved to Deutsche Bank and persuaded him to come and join him there.
But Deutsche Bank must have been aware of this, shall we call it, adverse media that he'd attracted?
Yeah, they were. What's referred to as a junior relationship coordinator prepared a memo for senior management, which included details of the plea deal and that he'd been involved in 17 out-of-court settlements related to his conduct.
So Deutsche Bank would have been aware at the outset that he had a history of paying off potential victims to avoid further legal jeopardy.
Yeah, they were. But when that email was sent by the relationship manager to senior management, it was accompanied with a note to the effect that they were going to earn lots of money, potential fee revenue of $2 to $4 million annually over time.
Which unavoidably, Ray, suggests that even the most morally reprehensible behaviour can be overlooked if the reward system in play is simply focused on profit and not the fundamental values of the business, assuming it has some.
And then we come to the approval, or rather the alleged approval.
Now, surely you would not onboard a client as high profile in a less than positive way as Jeffrey Epstein without explicit sign-off from the top of the house.
You might think that, Graham, but the consent order makes clear that it was an email from a senior executive quoting a conversation with the head of AML and the then general counsel for the Americas, in which the executive asserts that they had told him that the relationship did not require reputational risk sign-off and that the adoption could go ahead provided nothing else emerged during the due diligence process.
And I see, Ray, that the bank has, the word quoted is represented to the Department of Financial Services, New York, that it has no other record of this communication and that the Rep Risk Committee did not meet in connection with Epstein.
Oh, that's right. So we appear to have a high-risk client, from a reputational point of view at least, being onboarded without the requisite records of the Rep Risk Committee meeting and approving it.
Just the word of an executive reporting an otherwise undocumented conversation.
Now, I suspect that's not something that would ever happen today.
I certainly hope not. And accordingly, the relationship with Epstein started through two of his companies, both of which were based in the US Virgin Islands.
Which makes a change from the British Virgin Islands, doesn't it?
Yeah, true, yeah. And I see the purpose of the relationship was to, quotes, hold marketable securities and cash and, quotes, invest long-term with the bank.
Not something they adhered that closely to, as we're going to see.
Well, no. Epstein and associates would ultimately open 40 separate accounts with Deutsche Bank.
And the relationship was cleared by an AML officer on the basis of that historical email. But there's no indication that the officer spoke with the author or with the other actors mentioned in the email.
In hindsight, not a good move.
No. However, there is good news.
Is there?
Yeah. From the time Epstein was onboarded, the relationship was classified as high risk.
Good?
Well, yeah. Apparently, he was classified as what they refer to as an honorary PEP.
An honorary PEP? It's easy for you to say. I can honestly say, Ray, I've never heard that expression before now.
No, me neither. It was, according to the consent order, because of his association with prominent political figures.
Well, of course, Epstein is known to have been photographed with Donald Trump, but this situation was well before he became a political figure, so I guess this is referring to a previous president who was also known to be friendly with him.
I think it must be.
Either way, that means the relationship would have been subject to enhanced due diligence and ongoing monitoring.
Yes, but the order states that this was not tailored to the specific risks to which Epstein exposed the bank.
Clearly. For a start, over the course of the relationship, Epstein sent at least 18 wire transfers for more than $10,000 to his alleged co-conspirators, including all three mentioned in the order.
And what's more, the bank was not always aware that the recipients were alleged co-conspirators.
No, and it wasn't just co-conspirators who were receiving money, was it?
No, Epstein created the Butterfly Trust, and Deutsche Bank opened checking and money market accounts for it. The trust included a number of beneficiaries, including the three co-conspirators referenced in the order, along with a number of women with Eastern European surnames.
And quite properly, Epstein was asked about this, and he said they were all employees or friends.
Which raises a couple of questions, like, why are they beneficiaries of these transfers, and how did you meet them?
And that earlier email reporting the conversation which said it was okay to do business with Epstein was once again the source of approval for these accounts.
It's doing quite a lot of heavy lifting, that email, isn't it?
It flipping is. And given some of these beneficiaries had already been implicated in procuring and paying off potential victims, and that others were from countries known to be targeted for trafficking, some very significant risks have been circumvented by it.
To the point that one compliance officer flagged concerns about one of the co-conspirator beneficiaries, which received a response to the effect that, yes, we know that, but the case was never brought to trial and they were never convicted of anything.
Blimey. Right, if we waited for people to be convicted before offboarding them, most of the best-known money launderers of the past 20 years would still be happily transacting away in most of the world's banks.
It does get worse, though, Graham. once up and running, the Butterfly Trust promptly dispatched more than 120 wire transfers, totalling more than $2.65 million to beneficiaries, including transfers to both co-conspirators and women with Eastern European surnames, for the purpose of covering hotel expenses, tuition and rent.
And another 7 million went to law firms as settlement payments, along with a further 6 million in legal expenses.
So here we have a high-risk client, subject to annual review, who has a proven history of soliciting minors, is on the sex offenders register, has served time in prison, has known co-conspirators who operate alongside him, and yet these payments to various women from far-flung countries for hotels, payments to lawyers for their fees, and what looked like out-of-court settlements didn't appear to have so much as raised an eyebrow.
Ray, that's not entirely true, as the bank's anti-financial crime department twice escalated issues in 2014 and 2015 following further press developments.
And initially they were rebutted again using that old email.
but this time, the AML officer suggested that since this email wasn't a direct approval, hurrah, they should still run it by the head of AML compliance.
There's a fantastic quote in the order attributed to this unnamed AML officer in relation to that email. It states that it was, quote, not a direct approval by the head of AML compliance for Deutsche Bank Americas and the then general counsel for Deutsche Bank Americas. It's a statement by a front office MD about his conversation with them and their alleged opinion not to escalate to rep risk.
You see, that actually is a fair summary, albeit a blunt one.
Yeah, and it achieved some progress because the case was put to the rep risk committee belatedly.
Good, because by then, as the order notes, quotes, 40 underage girls had come forward with testimony of Epstein sexually assaulting them, end quote. And that, start quote, Epstein had managed to settle at least 17 lawsuits out of court.
What, in the same way that the transaction history from the Butterfly Trust tended to suggest exactly the same?
Yeah, something like that.
And doesn't this draw into sharp focus why we do annual transactional reviews for high-risk cases? It isn't just to make sure that everything's up to date and that there haven't been any changes. It's to have a holistic view of the entire activity over the course of the year, in a way that monitoring software just can't. That human ability to look at a sequence of events in context and form a judgment as to whether they make sense or not. That's still a difficult task for a computer, which won't always have all the relevant information to work with anyway.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. And then when the Rep Risk Committee did meet to discuss Epstein, and contrary to their own policy and procedures, no written record of the discussion was kept. But that didn't stop one of the committee emailing the front office executive responsible for the relationship later that day to say that the committee was, quote, comfortable with things continuing.
And sadly, we'll never get to know how or why they came to that decision.
No, but later that week, or maybe the next, another email emerged from a member of the committee reaffirming the decision to retain the relationship, but imposing some conditions on it. And this is where things get really tricky, as one of the conditions was that Epstein be allowed to, long quote coming, beware, conduct trades and transactions in existing accounts without compliance pre-approval, provided that the business had determined these transactions do not involve any unusual and or suspicious activity or are in a size that is unusually significant or novel in structure, end quote.
And whereas you or I might interpret that as meaning unusual by comparison to what you might expect by reference to other clients of similar wealth, the transaction monitoring teams, unfortunately, were given the interpretation of unusual by comparison to Epstein's previous activity.
Which perfectly encapsulates one of the issues with transaction monitoring, as it's so often profiled against past activity and will alert when it detects changes.
Whereas if you hit the ground running with your suspicious activity, it's often only the annual review that will identify patterns inconsistent with the stated purpose and nature of account.
And even worse, these conditions, although they went up the line as far as the CEO for the Americas, they didn't make it to all of the front office staff who actually dealt with Epstein.
And it clearly had an effect, as a later flag transaction representing a payment to a Russian model and Russian publicity agent was closed with the comment, "Since this type of activity is normal for this client, it is not deemed suspicious."
And on top of that, a phrase that we will use a lot, the monitoring team also received instructions to check that any flagged transactions to women should be subject to verification that they were over 18 using internet searches, and only flag if they could not determine a rational explanation for the payment.
And over the following years, Epstein successfully increased his trading limits. His accountant gained the right to withdraw cash on his behalf. And despite frequent requests from compliance staff as to the nature of payments he was making, the relationship continued.
To the point where his attorney withdrew $7,500 cash several times a month on a total of 97 separate occasions. And when challenged, the response was that it was for Jeffrey's, quote, travel, tipping and expenses.
Now, Graham, I am, as you know, a man of modest means, and there hasn't been much opportunity for travel or tipping lately. But when there was, I managed very successfully with my credit card. I didn't need cash, and in fact, it makes life much harder in respect to my tax affairs to use cash anyway.
And that's a very fair comment, Ray, and one the bank might reasonably have asked Jeffrey about, except apparently they didn't. Not just that, but when his attorney asked how often he could withdraw cash without triggering an alert, and this was in 2014, 4 years before the relationship was ended, the bank was unable to find any evidence of a response.
Oh, very handy.
Not just that, that's that phrase again, but in 2017, he specifically asked a teller at the branch if withdrawing more than $10,000 would trigger an alert, and when told, yes, it will, he broke the withdrawal into two smaller amounts over the following 2 days.
Do you know, I'd see that as a red flag, Graham.
yeah, so would I, Ray. But when the bank spoke with the attorney about his behaviour, he assured them that it was not intended to avoid reporting requirements. Oh. And the bank reported that they found him to be credible and permitted him to carry on.
And I see shortly before ending the relationship, he withdrew $100,000 in cash, reporting that Epstein needed the money for household expenses and tipping.
What household expenses need $100,000 in cash to meet, right?
I couldn't begin to speculate, Graham. But over 4 years, this chap managed to withdraw $800,000 cash in total.
That is a heck of a lot of tips, Ray.
And after all that, the Miami Herald, doing a wonderful job of investigative reporting, published a detailed article about the plea deal, which promptly led to some very serious conversations and the reassessment of the risk of having him as a customer, a decision which was reversed and they decided to exit him.
Yeah, of course, by then, Deutsche Bank had received some pretty hefty fines, and it was also having to deal with its ongoing relationship with Donald Trump, who by now was president and a known past associate of Epstein.
All of which would have had some bearing on the decision, I would think.
You'd think. But even then, the relationship manager drafted a couple of reference letters for other financial institutions, one of which stated that he was, quote, unaware of any problems relating to the operation or use of the accounts.
Okay, and experience has taught me to let that pass without comment. But there is one aspect to this whole affair that people don't seem to have picked up on.
You mean that all these alerts were on outflows rather than inflows?
Exactly that, Graham. I mean, it's fascinating to see where Epstein's money was going and what it was being spent on. But I'd be more interested in where it was coming from.
Yes. I mean, his payments may or may not have been related to criminal activities, although, Ray, I have an opinion on that. But the question I'd love to be able to answer is the source of the funds that were enabling all of these payments.
But that will remain an open question for now, I suppose. So, where next, Graham?
Well, Ray, if this was the first act in this Shakespearean tragedy, we still have two more to cover. So in the next part of this special episode, and I believe in a third, we will move on to look at a couple of troubling correspondent relationships, one of which, like Hamlet, is centred in the Kingdom of Denmark.
I'm looking forward to it.